26, 27, 28, 29, 30, 31, 32, 33, 34, 35. Race relations in 20th century Atlanta.
Yeah.
And I'm interested in various aspects of your administration. So I thought I'd begin with the 1969 election. And I was curious there, for one thing, about the importance of racial factors in that election, in terms of why the black community gave you so much support, almost as much as they did to Horace Tate, for example.
Almost as much.
Well, I think in the
they gave me a lot more. Otherwise, he would have been elected.
Well,
not really.
You got 44%. You got 49%. And you got white, a good deal of white vote also.
Oh, yes.
Well, this is not the runoff now. This is the.
I'm sorry. I thought you. I'm thinking of the general election.
Okay, general election. Okay, I was curious about that. Why? Why they supported?
I don't even remember what the division was between me and Horace. He got
49%. You got 44% of the first
black
election
of the black vote.
Yes,
I'd forgotten that figure.
But
excuse me. So your question was what?
Okay, why the black support to you over one of their own?
My own analysis would be that they felt like a win and that he couldn't. At that time, they still did not have a majority who raised the voters. And I think it was purely a practical matter.
Okay. In terms of Jackson running for vice mayor, then that too, they thought they could take the second position in that? This is Jackson of the Fires.
I don't remember the figures there. Tell me what the figures were now.
I don't have the figures.
I'd have to analyze them based on the figures, I can tell you.
But in the sense that you would say generally that the feeling was that it was not time for black to win the mayor's position?
No, not a question, not time. They were ready. Yeah. They just didn't have the numbers.
Okay.
Also, of course, I offered them what they were wanting in the way of philosophy that Farris did not. I mean, I can give you that comparison.
Yeah.
Farris was much more conservative.
I guess Cook, too, in terms of you. When you
yes.
Think Cook.
Right.
So you were, in a sense, was there any kind of meeting between the black community and yourself beforehand in terms of what you would do for the black community if you got that support?
Well, not out of the ordinary meetings. They were the typical screenings that the black leadership at that time, I don't know if they still pursue this or not, executed with perfection, very professionally, before every election. They set up their committees. Of course, some were a lot more meaningful than others because they really represented power where the leadership of the others were self-anointed. But they would set up a screening committee and invite you in, and they invited every candidate, the major candidates down to the most minor. And asking the same questions, whether you stand on this issue, that issue, and down the line. Now, the black community, I hasten to add, is not the only people, only part of the community that does that up here. Mm-hmm. Lee Wooden Voters does it, but I always send out a list of questions and ask about where they stand on. And the league's questions are issues in which they have an interest, black questions, and questions in which they have an interest.
Okay, so then the support for you then, therefore, was based on
my answers.
On your answers, if you could do something for the black community.
Yeah, there were no promises for me. Now, some of the others may have made promises. I just didn't make any promises to anybody because I wouldn't promise something I didn't know I could deliver. But and you don't know, because at that time we had what was called a weak mayor system,
right.
And you really didn't have a power other than persuasive. I don't think anybody would say that I promised anything, white or black, to any party.
But of course, you had your record as the city council president to stand on.
Yes, so I had that, and I promised. I made it very clear what my attitudes were, my philosophies. There was no secrets about it. But it wasn't a trade-off. It was a trade-off for the fact that, hey, if you like me, here's the kind of government you're going to get. And it's better for you, and more to your liking and what you want than my opponents.
And they accompany us in what you could provide.
Yeah. Or there were, for instance, there were, like in a specific, as you might, I'm sure you do know, I appointed the first black department heads in the city's history. Mm-hmm. But nowhere did I make a promise beforehand that I would do so. I don't remember the question ever even came up, but if it did, I'm sure I said, yes, I'm anxious to appoint someone.
Okay, so, okay.
That's the difference, I guess.
I guess
they would be so technical with you, but I wouldn't make
it. You know, I understand. There were expectations from you, I guess, in some sense.
There were expectations that I would do things that blacks wanted done because I believed in them.
Okay. Yeah, okay.
No question about it.
Yeah. Would you think of 1969 in any way as a turning point of the election in terms of you being...
Incidentally, I would... I think it's only fair to say that probably the same reason Cook got most of the right vote is because there were expectations on their part that he would do the things that they wanted. So that's not unusual. Everybody votes for the candidates they think will do the things they expect.
I will agree with another aspect of this, and this is really some other things I'm involved in besides this particular research. I'm on the Black Jewish Coalition, and I'm the neighborhood representative to that group. And I was curious, just from that angle, was it helpful at all that the Jewish community had taken a pro-integration and moderate stand previously, Rabbi Rothschild, for example, did that help you at all in terms of black voting? Did they shoot?
I don't know. Let me answer it this way. When I ran the vice mayor, president of the Board of Aldermen, I called president of the city council, I made it clear then that in addressing black audiences that in my opinion, being Jewish meant I was more sensitive to their problems than a person not brought up in the Jewish faith. So you say, did it help me? It might have helped because I was indeed trying to convey that fact that if I had seen prejudice, I had felt hatred not as much, not the same way. I would always couple that with the comment, you can't feel black unless you are black, but I felt I was closer to it and would react more in the way that they would react to a problem than would somebody more conservative. But as to the fact that I doubt if there's that much sophistication that in the electorate at large that because a sect or a religious group had a certain philosophy that they would be there about electing that person. I don't know, maybe.
Well, you know, the thing I guess the friends of the Jewish community having the reputation of being moderate and liberal.
Maybe. The Jewish people are still mysterious. To a lot of the less educated part of the community.
Sure.
And they were probably surprised to see I didn't have horns. So to say that they would know that the Jewish community was even more liberal and all, it may be being too generous for the less educated. And most of the blacks were less educated.
But the leadership, I guess,
they know. Well, the leadership, they're already on a working relationship with
right.
the Jewish community.
And
so that stays, they were already on the boards. I mean, they had Jewish people on the board, the NAACP, they had black people on the boards.
Okay, terms of giving you that blessing, or say that this man is better than Cook, let's say.
Well, they might have
more of a trusting attitude because of
I would say it, let's put it this way, whereas many people you hear complain because they have a name Goldberg that they can't get in the door, that in this case maybe my being Jewish got me in the door. Yes, maybe for the black leadership they would start with a more receptive attitude, but it was still the person. You got some bad Jews, and down the line, so. So I don't think they would ever thought this automatically. Well, he's Jewish, he's okay.
Well, did Rabbi Rothschild go to bat for you?
No. Well, I emphasize that no loudly, but I want to make sure you understand. He's a great supporter and friend, and I'm a great admirer. Was a great admirer of his, and he would have done anything except I never asked him to get involved. The Jewish community, as you know, the temple, the synagogues have not gotten into politics.
Well, except the temple itself, that was the bomb thing. That was one indication of, I guess,
being in the civic and social and life of the community is not the same as a political life.
Yeah.
He's very involved. He was, and that amount of, they thought it was, in his day, David Marks was.
Right.
And now, it continues that way at the temple, and it's been some, I probably got more political support from, I don't think any of the rabbis. I talked to several of them, but I never asked one. I would have been shocked if a rabbi had come out politically for anybody in my race or any other race.
No, he's right. It's sort of outside.
Yeah, it is. They just don't do it. They just don't do it in this proper way that they don't. But, I mean, listen, the quote white community felt generally that all the Jews were voting for me, which a vast majority of the opinion did. But the secret weapon was that they always thought they were, 5 million of us, or something like that. And so
5 million in the city, right?
Yeah, just in Atlanta, just in city limits. But that would elect me. So.
I was curious about how Bubba Blackman perceived you as somebody coming out of a liberal racial tradition.
I tried to use that, as I explained. I thought that was a benefit, a real benefit, and I tried to explain to them that was a benefit. And as you mentioned, I think some of them have already felt it.
I was also curious about whether race in any way was an important factor in decision making in terms of efforts to help the black community while you were in there.
Excuse me, can y'all just move somewhere else while you're talking? We got a tape recorder going here. You're right on top of us.
Whether there were efforts made to help the black community during your administration, whether race was a factor in any kind of decision making. And I'm interested particularly in your opposition to the Atlanta Fulton County merger, which would have brought more whites into the city, and annexation in general.
Wait a minute, man. You lost me. Start back with the question again.
Okay. Whether racial factors were a part of any decision making in your administration?
Always.
And particularly...
I mean, almost always.
In the what?
Maybe not in the model automobile I got, but everything else.
In efforts to please the black community, which was your position?
In efforts to do what was right.
Yeah.
No, seriously. I mean, I just felt it so strongly.
I agree.
It wasn't. But now, many. I'm not trying to convince you, but many explain that they didn't always like what I did. Nor did the Jewish community. Nor did the labor, organized labor. Nor did I'm trying to think of other groups that supported me. See, these groups supported me, but they at no point did. Anybody go through the whole 4 years perfectly satisfied? And so there were times, but the racial considerations were up and over.
How about things like annexation? Would you say it was an important factor there in terms of bringing more whites into the city?
Well, I never thought of annexation from a racial foundation of. How to explain this. Annexation, in my opinion, was not something to serve a racial need or interest or balance or whatever. But there were racial considerations as to whether what can be done and can't be done and who will it hurt and won't hurt and a lot of considerations like that. But annexation was had a lot of more economic than racial, but then that affects, the economy affects race and vice versa.
I guess what I always heard is that the black leaders were opposed to any more annexation.
That's true. Yeah, blacks are opposed to annexation because it will dilute their strength. Whites are opposed on the outside to annexation because it will bring in blacks. So they've got, but those are political factors. I don't know what you gave me, what you attributed to me there on an annexation program. My program was what they call the two-city plan, which almost passed, which in retrospect, most people feel it would have been good for the field. Most people feel it would have been good. And that was worked out. There were racial considerations in my planning it, mm-hmm. the considerations being as to the practical end, whether we could adopt it. To plan something, utopia, that you can't get through doesn't mean anything. So yes, we felt growth would be healthy for the city economically. And how do you achieve that? Well, like you say, if you just merge city and county, you can't do it politically because of racial reasons. So how can we, what would be racial reasons that would be supportive? In my two-city plan, taking the south side and making that a city, and then taking the north side and making that a city, solve that.
Did the blacks support that?
Yes. And in fact, we passed the House through the legislature, and would have passed the Senate except for Lester Maddox, who blocked it. And I don't know, who's this story for this study for us? Is this your personal, or you plan to publish
it? That's my personal. I plan to get a book out of it eventually.
Okay, I'll give you something that I'd like to give you off the record, just because you're probably interested.
I can just turn this off and,
you know, just, well, in terms of that, then, I guess the blacks were agreeable to certain programs if they could retain the strength in the city. I guess that was the deciding factor.
Everything's a question of moderation or reasonableness.
But you had to work that into your consideration.
Yes.
This is your constituency.
Yes. Yeah. Well, no, not for that reason. Not because they were my constituents.
Mm-hmm.
It was because they were a majority of the city of Atlanta that I represented. Whether they were supporters of mine was not the point.
But they were the
difference.
But they were the growing political power in the city.
Yes, no question about it.
So any politician would have to...
This one didn't.
Okay, that's...
Didn't operate that way.
Well,
I didn't have to be re-elected. I didn't have to serve. There's a difference.
Oh, well, yeah, I guess that's true.
Yeah, they can always rationalize and say, well, I can do this even though it's wrong, because if I don't get re-elected, I can't do anything. You know, but I didn't have to do it. Anyway, go ahead.
Well, Broccoli just consulted before major decisions were made. You know?
In many cases, yes.
But, you spoke to was it Jesse Hill or?
It would depend on the decision. Yeah. I mean, what the issue was. If it had to do with the highway, consults some traffic people.
Yeah.
It would depend on if it was an issue that involved the black community. By all means, black leadership was consulted, but no different way than any other part of the community. Any issue that concerned them.
But you were trying to keep that sense of cooperation between whites and blacks that had begun back in the hospital period, I guess.
Oh, tried very hard. I was the one back when I was president of the city council, the board of aldermen, that introduced the legislation creating the Community Relations Commission.
Right.
I appointed Andy Young as my chairman this time and did a great job. I spent more time on that probably. Now there, yes, everything was racial consideration. Not everything. There was some that had to do with homosexuality, some had to do with senior citizens. There were other segments too that
but the ties, you try to keep the ties.
Yeah,
that's been one of the things about Atlanta that seems unusual, actually.
Yeah, very important. But see, that's all right, now we're talking human relations instead of politics.
Right.
Apologies for that.
What was the purpose of the Community Relations Commission? Because I was set up a new program.
Yes, I introduced the legislation. It was to foster, nurture good relations in our community between different walks of life, not just racial.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, I mentioned homosexuality. I appointed an active leader from the gay community to the Community Relations Commission. The Atlanta newspapers show how pitiful they are. This young man worked for the journal,
mm-hmm.
and the journal tried to Jack Crawford himself called City Hall to Riley Grimes, the City Hall reporter, and had him come into my office just before the move conference when I was going to announce it, asking me not to name him because they didn't want to be identified. Of course, you have to think back now, it's a long time ago. And it's,
yeah. Well, yeah, I guess the 60s, sure.
Still showed their colors. Yeah, the Community Relations Commission served a great purpose. And, like I said, we had a senior senator, we had a youth member, in fact, it was Michael Hollis, now president of the town board of Atlanta.
Yeah, that lasted in Buck until the Johnson administration. I guess he's the one that killed it eventually.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, I guess.
Yeah.
I was also curious about the MATA rail line. What I've heard from other people so far is that the whole point about pushing the rail line westward first into the black communities on the west side was to give black support for the bond vote. And is that the way it was, or?
I can neither admit nor deny. The problem being that I really wasn't in on that part of it. There were some black leaders. Leroy Johnson, I think, was in the forefront, I think, at that time. But anyway, there were some who promised. But this was after... I can't remember. Do you think this was before the referendum? It may have been.
Well, I think the first bond issue on MATA lost. That was 61.
Yeah, well, that was before. I'm familiar with that. And then later, I came forth with the program to do it with the sales tax. And I felt it was a great benefit to the black community. And the sales tax, although more aggressive, I pointed out with the subsidized fare structure, would actually cost them less than others. They would get more money back because they were the biggest users of mass transit. So I used blackboards when I went into the neighborhoods and showed them where increased taxes would decrease bus fare, and they end up making money. So
I think Leroy Johnson and Julia Bond first. I think what they were the ones pushing for that in the Senate, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I guess what I'm curious about it, was there any kind of trade-off?
Well, not, I didn't, and I didn't, and
did you hear about any trade-off?
Yeah, I'm, okay. No, I'm not trying to hide from it, I'm just trying to explain that it was not a major, factor.
Okay.
I think the way it developed, and I'm just really searching my memory now, there were a lot of public hearings, and in these public hearings, we would get up and we would explain this and explain that and answer questions and defend our position, whatever. Most of these in the black community, but they were also in the white community. And they were, you know, sometimes we want monorail and we want buses instead of fixed rail. We want, everybody had a different opinion. And I think it was in those areas where some of them said, we won't ever even get service, or we'll be the last ones, we're always that. And somebody probably said, look, we'll give it to you first, or you'll be one of the first, or whatever. And so there was, felt there was a commitment, but there was never any trade-off commitment, believe me, with anybody that was in any position of authority to agree with any other group formal structure that yes, if you will get their support, we will do this for you. That was not done. The only commitment was made was the reduced fare. And even that, they went around saying that they got a commitment that it was 7 years. That's too something that came up during these arguments, during these public hearings, and that wasn't really a commitment either. That was the way the bill was drawn. But the legislature that it would be 76. So it wasn't a promise to them, yes, we promise you, you'll have the
Yeah, display. Yeah, the thing is, if the rail line went to this area first, up to Lenox, let's say, how much approval you've gotten from the black community on a bond issue, if it had gone completely out of their own territory?
Well, see, this was not a bond that was taxed on the property, it was taxed on the sales tax, and it included the bus system, which was one of the best bus systems in the United States, and it included, and that's what they were using, and that's what they were paying 60 cents for, and we were going to drop it to 15 cents. So it didn't make any difference who went first. Now, I say any difference. Yes, it may have made some difference. You could say that, in fact, if without that, it wouldn't have passed. Because without any one thing, it may not have passed, because it passed by such a small margin. I mean, I got up in a helicopter, you hear about that, and went over the expressways and when the 5 o'clock traffic, and used a bullhorn and said, if you vote yes, you get out of this mess. Well, now, they, this being the Bible Belt, they thought it was God speaking. See? I mean, all they heard was his voice. That was in Time Magazine. We did everything. I got on buses in the front and walked through talking to every person on it and got off at the back door and then get on the next bus in the front and walk through talking to everybody.
I guess
so,
the reason I bring it up,
so any one thing could have won it.
The way I heard from the blacks, I talked to a few black leaders already, and they seemed to say, yes, we supported the bond or whatever, we supported the idea, and they put the rail line in the west side.
Small part of it. Small part of it. But it was not wrong to put it in the west side.
No, I don't think it was either.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of people out there.
Well, maybe just an attempt to show how powerful they were.
That's exactly what. Same thing when they were, like I said, saying later when they tried to raise a fare that, oh, we guaranteed it would be 7. That was part of the agreement. That was just, again, conversation in some of these rallies.
Okay, how about the placement of the Omni? Was that any kind of racial factor involved with it?
None at all, man.
In terms of being a bridge over the railroad gulf, in terms of bringing in black communities closer to the west side, or
none at all.
Or was it just for economic reasons?
That was what?
Placed there for economic reasons? Whatever.
Well, I'll tell you exactly why it's placed there, because John Portland tried to get me to place it down at the Peachtree Center here at near the Civic Center.
Yeah.
In fact, yeah, I've hardly spoken to me since, because the way John Portland does them, he tells you, he doesn't ask you, or he doesn't suggest, and he's not used to people saying no. Now, see, the Omni, I have to digress a minute from Bragg, but so that you understand, the Omni is the only sports facility that we know of in the United States built with public funds where there's no call on the taxpayer, regardless of whether it's successful or not, whether they sell any tickets at all. But see, the stadium's not like that, and most sports facilities around the country have developed where if they sell tickets, yeah, it's okay. But if you don't sell tickets, it's too bad, taxpayer. You pay the deficit, and that's what we've done at the stadium every single year except last year. $200,000, $400,000 a year comes out of it. And incidentally, I supported the stadium too because I thought it was a good thing, even though I thought it would lose money, and it indeed does. Coliseum time, when I became mayor, I said, no, you know, one luxury is enough for the city. Mm-hmm. The only way I'll do it is if I can do it without any call on the taxpayer. Now, that took some very specific ingredients to do that. Now we're talking a business deal, not a racial deal. But it turned out that the one of the specifics was that the guy who owned the Hawks owned that land where the Omni is, say Tom Cousins.
Yeah.
And so we could do a deal there, where anywhere else we'd have another million, $2 million, $3 million. The whole thing was worth $17 million. So
if any black leaders are going to this decision, strictly on an economic basis.
I don't remember any blacks ever being seen anywhere except for the groundbreaking throwing basketballs. Well, I mean as a compliment.
Yeah, sure. I know.
We do a great groundbreaking.
I was just wondering whether pressure generated by the civil rights movement was more effective in Atlanta than other cities due to this long tradition of cooperation between white and black communities at the political influence they had. I mean, you know, why Birmingham exploded and why we didn't was the fact that we did have here some sort of tradition of sitting down.
Well,
even if behind the scenes, sitting down.
But you really ought to go beyond that and say, why did we have the tradition of sitting down? The way we differ from the Birminghams or Memphis or some of these other southern cities, several, but one is being the nation's capital for black education. When you've got people who are sitting around a conference table, probably the campuses, a hell of a lot easier to communicate.
That's definitely a big plus.
In many ways, but at that time, where you had to get together and negotiate with people you've never spoken to, never seen, never understood, two completely different worlds, at least, that was a big help. See, that they they had perfect diction, and they had good vocabulary. And they, all these things, all of a sudden, you know, broke the barrier. Another factor that's seldom mentioned, that I think do a lot of the credit, is that Atlanta was the headquarters for many of the civil rights movements.
Okay.
So these were not outsiders. And Martin Luther King lived here. SNCC was headquartered here.
Because one of the reasons they were, because of the black colleges, I suppose.
Maybe so, I don't know. SNCC, if I brought SNCC here, it was through the Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. You know, and then everybody, CORE had a major office here, NAACP major office, all these. So the leadership we were sitting there with were our own people. And that makes a lot of difference to the center. You know, you start dealing with outsiders.
Yeah.
They're foreigners. And so these people, they were going to Birmingham and going to Memphis to meet them. They were outsiders coming in there causing trouble. Entirely different.
Yeah, but you have conversations in the city going on between the white and black communities going back to, I guess, after the 1906 riot, people began to sit down and talk to each other.
Yeah, but they were local people.
Yeah.
I mean, all the way, the oldest one living is probably Morris Amos, the druggist. He was on the city executive committee, elected office. Yeah, back in the 30s, he was sitting around with whites discussing racial issues.
Well,
anyway.
I spoke to Wayne Holmes Borders already, and he goes back then. Yeah.
So those were two of the main things, I think. Then the third factor was that we, for whatever reason, happened to be blessed at that time with a very courageous and progressive and liberal and intelligent leadership in the media.
Ralph McGill.
Yeah, Ralph McGill and then Gene Patterson fit in that mold. And we had people of conviction, and that played a big part in helping this city.
Yeah, just
get through those hard times.
Well, I guess plus you have people like Hartsfield now and you who are willing also to come.
Yeah, but the Hartsfields and Allens and myself can't do it without strong support, you know, from the media.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Both papers are pretty good.
Yeah, they really were back then. Not anymore, but they were then.
Well, and they weren't before then.
No, that's true. But in that period, yeah.
You're right. Okay, I was also, just sort of the last point, I wanted to get to the making.
One other thing, yes, Stanley, and I don't know, it's sort of the fourth thing if I were to list factors, and that was, and I don't know the reason for this, but we had a, I think, from this, my observations, we had a much larger percentage of young leadership, with Tom Cousins and John Portman's and Charlie Atkins, the people who were in that age bracket, who were in the forefront in the business community, who were willing to get involved a little bit. I didn't see this when they had riots in Birmingham, and they showed the TV news. It was always these much older people who were already much more conservative and they set in their way.
The Cousins then comes up a lot in terms of what goes back to Morris Abram, of course, also.
And Cecil Alexander. We can go down the list. There were a lot of people in that age bracket then that were out there involved.
Yeah. You know, again, that sort of gets back to what it being the Jewish question. Cecil Alexander, Morris Abram, yourself, Rabbi Rothschild, even Richard Rich, who opposed a lot of the desegregation of his own store, seemed to eventually work out his feelings and Jewish back.
I don't know if that's Richard, but I understood it, but
well, he came to terms with it.
That's the way to put it.
Less of the point, the 73 election, which I guess was a little more volatile for yourself and what was happening. That, I guess, was more of a very racial aspect of that election.
Actually, two or three ways to define racial. No question but that there was a racial result in that all the blacks voted for the black candidate.
Yeah.
What the Atlanta newspapers tried to paint and did very successfully as a racial campaign never existed. the one term that they took as being racial was Atlanta's too young to die, which was my slogan in the runoff.
Which I can't go away, but just too early campaign.
It's funny because since then they've used the slogan. You know, they've showed pictures of downtown Atlanta, deteriorated vacant stores and trash on the streets. Maybe they didn't use the exact same words, but the same thing. Say that, look, Atlanta has, look what's happened to Atlanta. So it has.
Well, I know what they put about it, slogan.
Yeah.
What did you mean by it?
I meant that I was the best man for the city, that Maynard couldn't run it, and sure enough, he didn't. So, to me, it was every candidate I've ever known who's ever run seriously has had to come out and claim he was the best man, and that the other man couldn't do it. And that's exactly what I was saying. And I was saying that, heck, we got too good a city to hand it over to a guy like Maynard Jackson. Now, in other words, there's no reason in the world I couldn't use the exact same words if I had a white opponent.
Well, there's nothing he could have done there really would have, nothing to strip racial there.
Well, maybe so, but they really grabbed it and ran with it and did a good job with it. But seriously, stop and think about it. If I had a white opponent, and I could have come out of Atlanta too young to die, and showed pictures of vacant building, which is what we did, closed schools and a number of interviews in front of them and things like that. Nobody could have said it was racial. So there was nothing, no intent. Helen Bullard was my campaign manager, one of the most liberals that's ever come out of Atlanta's leadership. But better than that, the one who wrote the slogan was Ralph McGill Jr.
Yeah,
it hadn't been reported because the Atlanta newspapers won't report that. He was working with Cargill Wilson, I think, the advertising agency, or whoever it was, public relations firm, apparently. And, we just, it never occurred to me that's racial. Now, some of my staff may have said, man, this is, we think this is racial. But they didn't say it to me. If they had, I would have said, wait, let's take another look at it. Now, seriously, because I, just no way in the world would I have wanted to do something that was racial. I did my best to get out the right vote, because I was convinced then, and I was right. I was convinced in Sidney Marcus's campaign, and I told him before he ran. I was convinced, in my first campaign, that the majority of people would vote along racial lines.
Even though he had done a lot for the black community.
I'll tell you something else off the record. I'm a grown man and I knew what I was doing. What I didn't know though, and I'll be frank about this, I thought we still had a majority white registration. And it wasn't until the runoff that I realized we didn't. And that's because of our bowling calls, which candidates do, a normal procedure in trying to get out the vote. And we found every third, fourth call almost, the person would say, oh, well, I moved to Gwinnett a year ago. Oh, I've been out of Atlanta 2 years. I mean, just every fourth call, it was impossible. I was going to realize we're dead. I knew it before the runoff.
Well, then, but then again, you did get some black support while on Cochrane.
I got some of the leadership, but they had decided and they told me that, but I knew I wasn't going to be able to get the black vote. I got 90% of the white vote. They got it down to last article, I think, said 50%. They keep getting worse and worse every article. It's horrible. And everybody picks up the one before and makes it a little better from their viewpoint. But it was about almost 90% of the white vote. But I only got about 10% of the black vote. And it just wasn't enough anymore.
Sure.
And it's the same mix that Sidney Marcus got.
Yeah.
And that's the way it comes out almost every election. If you've got fairly decent people running, that you will end up with that kind of division. And it may be that way for a long, long time.
Well, it's not surprising, really, considering that they've been...
People vote along the lines of what they think is going to be best for them. That's what election's all about. But you got a voice to express your opinion for what you want, what you think is good. And you vote for that person who espouses that philosophy.
Definitely. At the beginning of the 1973 election, you had made a charge that there was some sort of deal or agreement between the white power structure and the black leaders to have the whites support Jackson and the blacks to support Wade Mitchell, the council president. Remember that at all?
I remember that, that point, but I didn't remember my making it, but I might have. Yeah. I remember the point being made.
I just pulled it out of the newspaper.
Yeah.
I was curious whether there was any basis. Do you have any kind of knowledge of the agreement that...
Oh, they say the day that they made that agreement.
They did?
Yeah. They weren't able to make it stick, but...
Wade Mitchell lost for it.
Yeah, so, yeah, that's what I'm saying. They weren't able... Yeah, they report, and I didn't remember that I had said it, but I might have, but I've heard it, I still hear it.
You
know, yeah. From people who would be in the know on something
like that. So I guess the feelings were that, well, you were having problems with the business leadership in the community, I guess.
Yeah, but see, they didn't support me the first time.
Either. Yeah, right.
So that didn't mean anything to me. I mean, that was just trying to stir up some interest.
And why support Jackson and then you at this point? I mean, was it just they had come to terms with it's time for a black to become mayor? And
No, that was the one they thought to win again, back to the first question they asked me. If they had thought I could win, I'd have gotten the support, hands down.
I was also curious if you have any idea of why Black supported Jackson rather than Leroy Johnson in the campaign.
Well, the Black community, and I don't find fault with this because the people I said earlier that to a large degree they're still great deal less educated, less informed. And so, excuse me, they are more likely to take the suggestion of a handful of leaders. And the leaders serve a purpose in very carefully trying to pick the person they think is best and then advising their flock.
Okay. Jackson got the blessing.
Jackson got the blessing, hands down.
Also, I was wondering why Black supported Fowler against Jose Williams. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, see, Jose, I said a minute ago that votes will divide 90-10, assuming you got two reasonably good candidates. Jose is such a wild man that you can't consider him as a reasonably good candidate.
Excuse me, this is for $50, and she's leaving very early in the morning. Do we have any cash here that we could cash this? Do you personally have any that you might take it until Monday?
I don't.
Okay, in other words, Black saw Fowler as a more, I guess, legitimate leader, something they could deal with than Williams, who was...
Yeah, they just really didn't take Williams that seriously. They thought he would embarrass them, the leadership did. And I think that's purely rather not wanting to be embarrassed. Now they would have supported him over an idiot, white.
Oh, sure. Kid. Or a racist.
Yeah, or a racist. And you'll find that, believe it or not, I think most whites even would support a black over an idiot white.
So, I hope so.
Yeah, I think they will. I think when it gets down to it, if you end up with a race where you got, Lionel C. Lowe, who wants to have a thing. If he would have run for mayor and he'd be the, for some reason, the mayor, you're going to have a black, but I'm trying to think that, a situation where you had a majority white, they would not vote and elect him over a decent.
Williams made a statement during the campaign that what you were saying, apparently, of how they were interpreting you what you were saying would stir up anti-Semitic feelings among young blacks. I don't know if you remember that or not. Any indication of that, or was that just Williams sort of shooting off in the mouth?
I don't remember saying it. There wasn't any indication.
Okay. All right. Basically, in all, I would say, let me just sort of sum it up, that Black decisions or Black leadership did play a role in your administration, certainly, in terms of your consulting them.
Yes. First, they got me elected.
Yes.
No question about that.
Yeah.
And beyond that, they got representation in City Hall.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's the best way to put it, that with the majority black constituency and one that's been had been suppressed for, you know, 100 years in this city, that they had great needs, and those needs were met satisfactorily, I think, from their viewpoint and from my opinion.
I guess very quickly, if there was not a black candidate against you in 73, you probably wouldn't have been elected very easily.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. All right, I still, a lot of people speak.
You can put out that red tag.
I'm just curious who you were closest with in the black community in terms of decision making. Or your ties to the black community. Calhoun?
No.
So,
Sam Williams, probably. Yeah. Yeah, he was probably my closest ally. Jesse Hill was close. We used to work politically with Leroy Johnson.
Yeah, sure.
But,
King Sr., well, you didn't get
to do it. Yeah, used to meet with him some. Pretty frequently. He was of a different school, but you know, at different times I'd meet with any number of them, Benjamin May. You know, they were all involved. I tell you, it's something that's changed a great deal with regard to black involvement. I appointed the first black. Show you how times have changed. I appointed the city's first black department head in the city's 125 year history at that time. And it happened to be very important. And it happened to be the first department head opening that I had, remembering that at that time the mayor didn't have the right to remove department heads except with cause. So I took what I got. And then until somebody retired or their term expired, I didn't have an opportunity to appoint. So the first one that came up was the personnel department. What could be more important than the head of the personnel, so trying to increase black employment and opportunities for all in city government. But I was determined that we would not appoint anybody, black or white, unless they were qualified. And finding a black personnel director was extremely difficult. Who was qualified for that position. And I remember when I was asked about the leadership, calling all of them in, 10, 12 of the black leaders into my office, saying, hey, look, I want to appoint a black to this position, but I need your help. I can't find one. We've looked high and low. You help me find one, and I'll appoint him. Now, the difference between man and man is that not a single one said, no, saying, go ahead and appoint one. There are plenty of them. We'd all agree, yes, we don't want you to appoint somebody unless they're good. We'll help you find somebody. And we'll look, and we'll look, and we'll look. And they looked for a year before we found. We held this position open, I think it was 12 months, before we filled that position, using the acting director in the interim. And then we brought one from New York. The second one, the second department head I appointed, second opportunity I had, which was also black, was Public Works. Went all the way to the Virgin Islands on that.
Nobody in the local community
that's really made it. Oh, well, see, we really, now these people, never ever did any white business person or leader, civic person or religious leader or civic, social, nobody in leadership that I know of ever questioned either one of these appointments because they were excellent people. And so not only did they serve the community well, the citizens of Atlanta who were paying their salaries, but they served race relations well because they proved to people that, hey, you know, the fact that a person is black doesn't mean he can't do the job because he's an excellent personnel director. He's an excellent public relations, public works director. Yeah, it really meant something.
So in terms of your appointment, you thought it was the right thing to do, plus you were serving your black constituents. You really see both of those
responsibilities. Well, I didn't see the serving my black constituents. I saw it as the right thing to do, and I thought that it would help race relations in the city.
Which I'm sure it did.
Yeah, well, they did, those two particularly. There was a third one,
which I, who was able to elevate from inside to the prison, as the head of the prison board or whatever it was called. So, and of course, back then, see, they didn't even ask me to appoint the police chief black, the black leadership, they didn't even ask for it. And if you look at it in the light of the question you just asked me, I'd say that I would have thought probably that would have hurt race relations. Even if I'd had a real qualifier, I think at that point, remembering, for instance, that it wasn't too many years before that, that blacks weren't allowed, black police on the force weren't allowed to arrest white people, give them a traffic ticket.
You would have thought it was moving too fast.
I would have thought, yeah, that probably would have hurt race relations. Not too fast for me.
Yeah.
But it probably would have hurt race relations.
Maybe it would have, who knows?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I interviewed a couple of blacks, but they weren't qualified.
Yeah.
But of course, it ended up the white that I appointed, some people thought he was a racist. And that caused more problems. Him and John Andrew. I got a lot of flack in the white community as well as the black community.
Well, you don't know
the whole story.
So, yeah.
Yeah, that's another whole story.
Yeah, that's, well, it's all very interesting.
Well, I wish you...
Ahead.
I was just saying another factor that helped us back in the 60s and early 70s in race relations probably was due to the influx of people in Atlanta from all over the United States and some abroad for that matter, that brought fresh thinking, new ideas here, people who had already maybe had some experience in integration in school or in college, so it wasn't completely foreign to them. The only 27% of us natives left in Atlanta, so that was really a benefit.
Well, I agree. I mean, that was sort of my feeling when I came. Actually, I was surprised how segregated the city was in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed something that was just a throwback.
Yeah.
So I guess if I had come here in the 50s, it would really seem like
another planet. Oh, yeah. I sure would have, yeah. And still, Atlanta was an oasis for the rest of the South. So I'm sure it's really rural areas.
Spoke to Reverend Borders and he said,